Any people here for the first time? Welcome. I hope what I say doesn't shock you, because I say strange things. I had an interesting vision this morning. In that vision, I saw myself in a beautiful emerald room. And into the room walked President Bush. And Saddam Hussein. And Shamir of Israel. And a couple of other people I didn't recognize. Gorbachev was there too. And they all sat around a round table. And they just stared at each other. So I went to the stereo and started to play some African music. At first they just smiled. Then they started to tap their fingers on the desk. And pretty soon they were shaking to the rhythm. And then they got up and started dancing. And they all hugged each other. And talked about peace. And they realized how foolish it was to hate each other like they do. They decided to take away all the boundary lines and make the world one united world. And then I opened my eyes. Whatever that means, it was interesting. Somebody asked me to talk about the law of cause and effect. We never usually talk about these things because it's on a relative scale. We talk about absolute reality, ultimate oneness. But yet, if we're aware that we're body conscious and mind conscious, we fall under the laws of karma or cause and effect. Therefore, I'll shortly talk about these things because it helps. Cause and effect exist because of time and space. If there were no time and space, there would not be cause and effect. In reality, there is no time and space, and there's no cause and effect. But in the relative world, there is. Cause and effect is another name for the law of retribution. Or as you sow, so shall you reap. Or the law of karma. And as long as you are under that law, you have to deal with the god of that law. That god is called Ishwar in the Hindu, Jehovah in the Hebrew religion, Allah in the Muhammad religion, and it goes by many other names. Those gods exist as long as you believe that you are the body-mind phenomena. and so does cause and effect. For every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. That's the law of physics. It's the same as the law of cause and effect. Everything you do ends up in the result. There's no escape from it unless you turn within and you no longer react to anything. Then you transcend the law and become free. But as long as we are still body conscious, we are under that law. This is how it works. If you want to grow oranges and you do not know anything about seeds, you would grab a lemon seed, plant it in the ground, and expect an orange tree to grow. The cause is the planting of the lemon seed. The effect is the lemon tree. The seed is planted in the earth. The earth is your mind, and the seeds are your thoughts. And the effect is the result you get from planting seeds. So you plant a lemon seed and your lemon tree grows, but then you start crying and screaming about it. I wanted oranges, you say. I demand oranges. And you have a tantrum, you have a fit. Nobody cares. You planted the seeds, and this is what you're getting as a result. Lemons. Of course, you can always make lemonade. But you wanted oranges. So why did you plant the lemon seed? You don't know. Maybe you planted the lemon seed in a previous life. You set up the cause at that time. The effect can come back to you many lifetimes from now as an orange tree, as a lemon tree rather. And you'll still scream, why did I plant a lemon seed? I wanted oranges instead. So it is when we see things we do not understand. For instance, when Mahatma Gandhi died, he got shot. Why would an honorable man like that get shot? The last words he said to his attacker was, I forgive you and thank you, my son. For he realized that in some other life he had set the cause in motion. And this is the effect he gets back. This is called delayed karma. Not as instant karma. Like when you step at the edge of a rake. You step on the rake, what happens? It hits you in the head. That's called instant karma. Who takes care of this karma? The God of karma, Ishwara, Allah, Jehovah. It is He who hands out what karma you're going to experience in each life. Let's take another example. Henry invites me to his house. I come into Henry's house and I go to the refrigerator. And I said, what's the eat? I eat him out of the house and home. Then I said, Henry, can I borrow your car? And Henry's a good guy. He says, sure. So I borrow his car and I wreck his car. Freak his headlights, his windshield. And I come back and park it like nothing happened. And Henry, being the good guy he is, doesn't say anything. Then I say, Henry, can you lend me $500? So Henry, being a good guy, says, sure. And I never expect to pay him back. I just take his money. Now what happens? By not reacting, Henry becomes neutral. When you're neutral, you do not accrue karma again. You're finished with that part of your life. When you react, you accrue karma. What happens to me? I've got to experience the effect sometime, somehow, of what I've done to Henry. It's got to come back to me somehow. Maybe not even in this lifetime, but it will come back, there's no escape. This is why when we see certain things in life and we do not understand, we should never judge, because everything is working out like it's supposed to. All is well and everything is unfolding as it should. Another example. People go searching for a Satguru, a teacher. They go to everybody they can find. And what do? They try to learn everything they can. They suck the Satguru dry. They try to take all his knowledge. But do they give him their hearts? Do they surrender to him? Do they take care of him? Do they do anything for him? Most Westerners do not. They just come to take, but not to give of themselves or anything else. And when they've earned enough, they go to somebody else and do the same things. So 20 years pass, then they wonder why they have not made any progress. Life is a reciprocal thing. Both parties have to give, and then they merge into one. But if one party gives and the other party takes, they come under the law of cause and effect, and they get exactly what they put out. Here's another example. I decided tomorrow I'm going to rob Security Pacific Bank. So tomorrow comes and I write out a note, and the note it said, I've got 25 hand grenades, a bazooka, and a submachine gun in my pocket. Give me $500,000 immediately or I'll blow up the bank. So the teller, of course, is frightened. And she gives me $500,000. And I get away clean. Nobody catches me. I go to Canada. 10 years pass. I go into business. And I'm successful. But then something happens. and the tax people come after me. It winds up in levy on all my dealings, on my business. And I owe them $500,000, which they get back from me. It makes me bankrupt, and I'm back where I started. Do you see how everything works out? There are no mistakes. The law is exact. The only way to get away from that law is by not reacting to anything that comes to you. Because everything that happens to you is karmic in nature. If you react to it, you are setting yourself up with more karma. And you are accruing more karma. If you realize that you are not the body-mind phenomena, you become totally free and absolved and emancipated. And there's no more coming and going for you. You become absolutely free. Basically, that's how it works. Any questions about that?
I have a question about maybe some tips on how not to react, since that seems so difficult.
It's simple. Whenever you're faced with a challenge or a problem, you act. But you don't react. What's the difference? When you act, you're spontaneous. You do what has to be done, it's over. When you act, you plan deliberately what you're going to do. The thoughts have to come to you when you react. And the thoughts of fear, anger, jealousy, rage, frustration, getting even, whatever. And then you react. But when you act, there's no thought. You just do it and it's finished, and you go on with your life. That's basically the difference.
But what about emotions? I mean, you react emotionally.
Same thing. Your mind does not know the difference between a thought and an action. You do. So when you're planning to kill somebody, your mind believes you've already acted and have done it, even if you never carry through. And that accrues more karma for you. Thoughts are things. For instance, the mind does not know the difference between a cancer and a cold. But you believe that cancer is deadly and a cold you can get over fast. So if you catch a cold, your system will make you get over it fast. But if you get cancer, your system believes that's like death. So fear comes in, worry comes in, not supposed to die. But you have said the cause of motion by your belief. That's how it works. So thoughts and actions are the same. There's no difference. The idea is to free your mind from thoughts. Not to think further than your nose. Catch yourself every time you think. And ask yourself, to whom do these thoughts come? Who thinks these thoughts? To whom do they come? And you'll realize they come to me. I think these thoughts. Everything is connected to the I. All your thoughts are connected to I. get rid of the I, and all your problems go with it. Follow the I to its culmination. Concentrate on the source of the I, and you will find that I does not exist, and you will become free.
Did you say that you'll find the I does not exist?
I does not exist.
Does not exist.
Right. I leads to nothingness, to freedom, to liberation. As long as you have a sense of I, you have problems. Because you always say, I am sick, I am poor, I am happy, I am unhappy, and so forth. And you're living in the world of duality. So when you follow I, all the concepts disappear with the I. And there's nobody left to think. You ultimately become free. You should also ask yourself, for whom is karma? Who has to experience karma? Who has to experience cause and effect? You will soon realize that that is only for your ego, not for you. You are free and have nothing to do with it. When you transcend the ego, karma goes, and you become totally free.
Who are you addressing as you?
Yourself. Yourself.
And that's not the same as I?
Same thing, yes. Me, I, it's all the same. If you ask yourself, to whom does the karma come? And then you say to me, hold on to the me, like holding on to a rope, and going down to the end of the rope. When you come to the end of the rope, there's nothing. So when you come to the end of me, reality exists. And reality ensues of its own accord. So we're not to look for reality. We're not to seek reality. We're not to trying to find reality. We're simply trying to let go of the other things. To the extent we let go of the other things, to that extent will reality come of its own accord. And you will be free. Now last week, I think it was Thursday that Fellow Nate was here. He made the statement that he'd been meditating for 20 years and nothing is happening. He's seen 35 teachers or more and still nothing is happening. I told him to hold on and keep going. He didn't like that. So when I went home, I opened one of Ramana Maharshi's books. And I just happened to come to that page that we're talking about. Mary, would you like to read it?
Surely.
Start over here. Go to here. Skip this. Read this. And go to here.
Go to here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So you start there, skip this part.
Skip that and start right over here.
Yeah.
Alright.
Now listen to this very carefully.
A visitor asked Bhagavan what one should do for the betterment of Atma. Bhagavan said, "What do you mean by Atma and by betterment?" Visitor, "We don't know all that. That is why we come here." Bhagavan, "The self or Atma is always as it is. There is no such thing as attaining it. All that is necessary is to give up regarding the not-self as self, and the unreal as real. When we give up identifying ourselves with the body, the self alone remains." Visitor, "But how is one to give up this identification? Will coming here and getting our doubts removed help in the process?" Bhagavan, "Questions are always about things that you don't know and will be endless unless you find out who the questioner is. Though the things about which the questions are asked are unknown, there can be no doubt that a questioner exists to ask the questions. And if you ask who he is, all doubts will be set at rest." Visitor, "All that I want to know is whether a satsang is necessary and whether my coming here will help me or not." Bhagavan, "First, you must decide what is satsang. It means association with sat or reality. And one who knows or has realized sat is also regarded as sat. Such association with sat or with one who knows sat is absolutely necessary for all. Sankara has said," Bhagavan here quoted the Sanskrit verse, "that in all the three worlds there is no boat like satsang to carry one safely across the ocean of births and deaths." This morning, questions were put by a visitor by name S.P. Tayal. "Mr. Tayal, I have been making sadhana for nearly 20 years and I can see no progress. What should I do?" Bhagavan said, "I may be able to say something if I know what the sadhana is." "Mr. Tayal, from about 5 o'clock every morning, I concentrate on the thought that the self alone is real and all else unreal. Although I have been doing this for about 20 years, I cannot concentrate for more than 2 or 3 minutes without my thoughts wandering." Bhagavan, "There is no other way to succeed than to draw the mind back every time it turns outward and fix it in the self. There is no need for meditation or mantras or japa or dhyana or anything of the sort because these are our real nature. All that is needed is to give up thinking of objects other than the self. Meditation is not so much thinking of the self as giving up thinking of the not-self. When you give up thinking of outward objects and prevent your mind from getting or going outward and turn it inward and fix it in the self alone will remain. Mr. Tayal, but what should I do to overcome the pull of these thoughts and desires? How should I regulate my life so as to attain control over my thoughts? Bhagavan, the more you get fixed in the self, the more other thoughts will drop off of themselves. The mind is nothing but a bundle of thoughts, and the I thought is the root of all of them. When you see this I is, and whence it proceeds, all thoughts get merged in the self. Regulation of life, such as getting up at a fixed hour, bathing, doing mantra, japa, etc., observing rituals, all this is for people who do not feel drawn to self-inquiry or are not capable of it. But for those who can practice this method, all rules and discipline are unnecessary.
Thank you, Mary. This is what I always say. I do not give lectures. I do not make speeches. I would rather sit in the silence than have to talk. For talking gets you nowhere. You know yourself. You listen to me tonight. By the time you go home, you'll forget everything. And then you'll look at one of the magazines and you will see a new teacher on the block. And you will say, let's go hear him. And this will go on forever. You've got to get down to the business at hand. You've got to make up your mind that you don't have. That you are tired of playing mind games. Jumping from teaching to teaching, from book to book. And living your same old life, to reversing the whole procedure. You stop reading, you stop running from teacher to teacher, and you settle down, doing the work of self-inquiry. Then you become free, fast. Otherwise, you will go lifetime after lifetime after lifetime of searching, 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 and never getting anywhere. But if you start practicing self-inquiry, soon you will start arriving at certain feelings that the world, people, places, and things, the universe, God, is a concept of your own mind. You have created God in your own image. And he exists for you as long as you believe that you are the body-mind phenomenon. So get to work and do something good for yourself. Any questions? Don't look so serious.
This karmic stuff carries over the next life. Who is it carry over to if there is no individual?
As long as you believe you are the body, you pick up new bodies every time. You drop the old one, pick up the new one.
Is that a completely different one, or is there carryover from one to the other?
It's a carryover. You don't look the same, but all the attitudes, samskaras, opinions, they all come back to you. until you transcend them completely. So, you do not transcend these samskaras by trying to get rid of each one at a time. You can never do it. For when you get rid of anger, fear pops up, and so forth. Rather, find out to whom these samskaras come. Who experiences these things? And find the source of the I. Then we'll all go and never come back. And you won't have any problems.
So are you saying, Robert, that from lifetime to lifetime, assuming that one learns something in a given lifetime, that there is a certain progress?
Definitely. You carry it over. For instance, with most of you who come here, if for some reason you don't make it in this life, what will happen to you most probably is you will be born in a spiritual family of yanis. You will be that far ahead of the game, and you will carry on where you left off. And but if you're selling drugs out in the street, you'll be born to a family of drug addicts, and you'll carry on from there. Everything is up to you.
So that sort of ties in with the idea of a soul evolving, even though that's not exactly what you're saying.
As long as you believe you're the body, the soul evolves. In reality, there's no soul and there's no body. As soon as you can grasp that, you wake up and you become free.
Is it possible to understand that completely if you're sitting where I'm sitting? You know?
You don't have to understand with your human mind. You just have to be and open your heart, and everything will happen by itself.
What do you mean by open your heart and mouth?
It means let love shine through, compassion, love, goodness. Have no opinions, have no concepts. No preconceived ideas. Just be open in your heart with love. And everything will come. That's what satsang is all about. Don't be like the fool who heard a story like this and decided to become a Zen Buddhist monk. So he quit his job and went to Japan and had an audience with the Roshi, or the head monk. And he said, I want to become a Zen Buddhist monk. And the Roshi said, okay. And he gave him all the rules and regulations. And he said, by the way, I forgot to tell you, we take a vow of silence here. We only speak 3 words every 10 years. So he said, okay. 10 years passed. And he had an audience with the Roshi. And the monk said, the food sucks. And he went back to his quarters. Another 10 years passed. And he had an audience with the Roshi and he said, the bed's hard. And went back to his quarters. Another 10 years passed. He went to the Roshi and he said, hey, I quit. And Roshi said, I don't blame you. You've been bitching ever since you got here. Don't be like that. Let's sing some more songs. I feel like chanting alone is done. You now have an opportunity to ask any spiritual question you like about anything. And we'll see where we go.
I'm sorry I missed some of the conversation about reincarnation. Is the I take it the soul is dependent on the ego.
The soul is dependent on the ego and the mind, as long as you believe you are the body. But when you give up the body belief, everything becomes redundant. It does not exist for you any longer. So all these things exist for as long as you identify with your body.
So as long as there's an ego, there's reincarnation.
Yes. Yeah. There's a God, and there's karma, and everything else.
After liberation, there's no more soul.
There's no soul, there's no God, there's no world, there's no universe. There's no liberation. There's no duality, there's no non-duality.
What is the difference between the soul and the ego, then?
The soul is the part of you that carries on. The ego is the force behind the soul. The ego is the doer that makes you believe I am the doer.
Well, it's just then the identification that exists after death of the body that carries over to the next so-called life.
Yes.
Does the same ego carry forward also? I mean, aren't the soul and the ego sort of interchangeable in that way?
The ego is always the same. The ego, soul, concept, and principle are always the same. They go from body to body. In body to body, they carry over. The thing to do is not to concentrate on that, but to ask yourself, for whom is reincarnation? For whom is there a soul? Who's going through all this? I am? Well, who am I? What is the source of I?
About these things like they are objects or solid entities, you know, ego, soul, etc. And somehow I get confused in that because I seem to remember Bhagavan's teaching as like there is no ego, you know, see what's really there. It seems to be his teaching, not that they are there to get rid of.
Exactly.
Sometimes I feel a sense of confusion of, is there an object to be destroyed?
There is no object to be destroyed. It never existed.
Right.
But as long as you are having difficulty with your life, they appear to exist. And if they appear to exist, we have to question why. Where do they come from? To whom do they come? And they will disappear. We work with what we've got.
So we're questioning appearances, essentially.
Yes.
What seems to be.
We're questioning the world. Where did the world come from? Where did I come from?
When you ask the question, who am I, there's kind of a blank spot, blank space before anything comes up. Is that what consciousness is?
Space is consciousness, correct. the space in between who am I is the real self. Abide in that. As you continue to practice, after a while, the space will grow longer and longer and longer. You will say, who am I? And pause. And you'll sort of get lost in consciousness. Then you'll start thinking again. And you'll go back to who am I? You'll be in a long space. Until who am I stops completely. And you become yourself. So as you continue to practice, the space in between becomes longer and longer.
Robert, is the self the space or the blank or the perceiver of the space or the blank?
The space is not a blank. It is not a perceiver. It is nothing that you can qualify. Nothing that you can discuss. Nothing that is known. For space to be known, there has to be a knower. And as long as there's a knower, that's not it. So you have to go beyond that to silence. Consciousness is silence. Silence is consciousness. They're both the same.
The space is not an it, but I. And is our problem in a sense that we see it as it and not I?
You exist. You exist where there is space, and you exist where there is I. So who exists in space? Who exists as I? Ask the question. Who exists? Follow the existence, follow the I. And you will come to nothing. You will come to consciousness by itself. But do not believe that the void is it. Many people experience a void and they think the void is it. But don't you exist? There is nothing that can be explained. As long as you can explain it, it's not it. So what is left? Silence. Quietness.
How does the music or song that you play help to realize the consciousness of unexplainable?
The music quiets the mind. It makes the mind quieter and quieter. It makes the mind one-pointed. So you can get rid of it and become still, quiet.
So we should listen to the music to quiet our mind?
Yes. If you come home after a hectic day's work, if you listen to chanting music like this, you'll become quieter and quieter. You'll become more and more relaxed. And you'll be able to go deep within yourself, deeper and deeper than you've ever gone before. That's how the music helps.
Of transcending, is it, Robert?
What's that?
Emotional transcendence in listening to music?
Oh, it quiets the emotions.
Oh, I see.
It transcends emotions. It transcends anger and fear. It's good for you. It's good for the soul. That doesn't exist. All of you still look pretty serious. I don't know why. It's not as bad, you know. this is fun. Put the right finger in there and the left finger in there and pull. Smile. Do not take life serious.
I just have a feeling I'm glad that you're here.
I'm glad you are. The material life is a series of changes. The only thing permanent in life is change. So when you chase life for possessions, for things, for people, you always become disappointed. Find yourself first, and everything else will work out.
Free will, is there only predetermination, destiny?
Everything is predetermined. The only free will we've got is not to react to conditions and to turn within. That's the only free will we've got. Everything else is destiny, karma. Even when I lift my hand like this, it's been predestined.
By whom or by what?
By the Lord of Karma, by Ishvara.
Which doesn't really exist.
Of course not. But as long as you don't know that, because you believe you're the body, then you've got to be careful. Otherwise, it's like getting a license. You may really go and hold up the bank tomorrow, and it doesn't matter. Because you think there's nothing. On the contrary.
It's taking a thorn to remove a thorn.
Yes.
So would a yoni reincarnate?
No.
Could you be off the karmic wheel? Right?
Exactly.
So attaining being a yoni is the last time that you've been on the earth plane, right?
A yoni has nothing to do with the world or the universe.
But I mean the body of the yoni that appears to continue existing is the last physical existence.
The body of the yoni appears to the ayani. And that's how the ayani sees the yoni. But in truth, the yoni has no body. There's no coming, there's no going for the yoni. There's no birth, there's no death, there's no body. But the yoni sees the body.
But for example, if you were born an yoni and you achieved enlightenment within a given lifetime, are you saying that the body would disappear, or you? Just from your perspective, it would never have existed.
To the yoni, it never exists.
But those around you would still see it as
well.
Yes.
Do you want to read something?
You know, I was all those years in the Zen monastery. Every morning, we recited the Prajnaparamita Hridaya Sutra, and for 12 or 14 years, I never understood it, and I stopped trying to understand after a while. I would like you to comment on it after I read it.
Okay.
I need the light up. It's very short. Avalokiteshvara was practicing deeply the Prajnaparamita, and he perceived clearly that all five sthandhas are empty and pass beyond all suffering and distress. O Shariputra, form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form.
and so also with sensation, thinking, impulse, and consciousness, which are also like this. All these things, Shariputra, have the character of emptiness, neither born nor dying, neither defiled nor pure, neither increased nor lessened. So in emptiness there is neither form nor sensation, thinking, impulse, nor consciousness. No eye, no nose, no ear, no tongue, no body, no mind, no form, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, nor object of mind. No element of I, nor any of the other elements, including that of mind consciousness. No ignorance and no extinction of ignorance, nor any of the rest, including age and death and extinction of age and death. No suffering, no origination, no stopping, no path, no wisdom, and no attainment. The bodhisattva, since he is not gaining anything by the Prajnaparamita, has his heart set free from all of the hindrances. And with no hindrances in the heart, there is no fear. Far from all perverted dream thoughts, he has reached the ultimate nirvana. By the Prajnaparamita, all the Buddhas of the three worlds have the utmost right and perfect enlightenment. Know then that the Prajnaparamita is the great spiritual mantra, the great radiant mantra, the supreme mantra, the peerless mantra which removes all suffering, the true, the unfailing. The mantra of the Prajnaparamita is taught, and it is taught thus, Gate Gate Paragate Parasamgate Bodhi Svaha. Gone, gone, gone beyond, altogether beyond, awakening fulfilled.
That's very good. If you're inclined towards Buddhism, you would follow the path that you just described. It depends where your feelings go, what your karma is, what you're inclined towards. We say exactly the same thing as different words, so I can code everything. It's very true. We're all inclined differently. Some of us are inclined toward Buddhism. Some of us are inclined toward Jnana. Some of us are inclined toward new cars. Everybody's different. But it's all good. Make it simple. Buddhism has a tendency to make things a little hard because you've got to remember all kinds of things. The only thing that you have to know is that you exist. You exist while you sleep, you exist while you dream, and you exist right now. Ask yourself, who exists? What is that which exists? Ask yourself. And when you find out, you'll be free. We try to make it very clear and very simple. The simpler, the better. We always teach also the best time is to start in the morning when you first wake up. You simply ask yourself, who woke up? I did. Who dreamt? I did. Who slept? I did. I was present in all three states of consciousness. Then who is this I? Follow the eye. Grab hold of the eye. Concentrate on the source of eye. And you'll become free. And you will carry it through the day. And your days will become happier and happier. Just by doing that.
What if you follow the eye and it just stops when you're just saying, who am I?
That's good.
And you just keep repeating, who am I?
No. Focus on the stop. Where it stopped.
Okay.
put all of your attention into the place where it stopped. You only repeat, "Who am I?" when thoughts come.
So just try to have a blank mind at "Who am I?"
Your mind becomes blank, but you still exist. So you really go beyond the blank mind.
How? I don't quite understand.
You simply ask yourself, "Who has a blank mind? To whom does it come?" That has to go. Everything has to go. As long as you believe I have a blank mind, you're still caught in the trap. Because I is still there. So it's not having a blank mind. It's going beyond the blank mind into total annihilation of the mind, where there is total freedom and bliss. Don't be afraid of going back there so far. A lot of people are afraid because they think they'll disappear. You don't disappear. You become blissful, happy, under all conditions.
Seems like when I do this with my eyes closed, that the consciousness of that space gets more elongated. Is this done like a formal meditation practice? Or?
Not really. When your space becomes elongated, again, it's a result of thinking. It is the mind that causes this. You have to go beyond that. Dive deeper. Dive deeper and deeper, asking yourself, to whom does this experience come? Who is feeling this? Who's going through this experience? No matter what experience you have, ask the question. Until all experiences cease, and there's a deep silence, in that deep silence is reality. It comes by itself.
I got the impression when Gail asked the question that she was talking about that deep silence. And that's what I meant by blank mind.
Well, the term blank mind is not so good.
The blank mind is what?
It's not so good of a term.
Not a good term. But this is what you were talking about earlier.
You want to lose all thoughts of I. And merge in consciousness, in the silence, quietness.
But then I think to go on from there, she was saying that what comes after the deep silence, or is that it?
That's it. But as long as you can explain it, it's not that.
Yeah. Too, just too simple.
That's right. It's not just having a quiet mind. Can you tell me why? Because you believe you've got a quiet mind. You've got to go beyond the belief of mind. There's nothing. There's no one left to say that. There's no one left to make any statement of truth. Everything has been transcended. There's no light and there's no darkness. There's no happiness and there's no unhappiness as we know it. There's a total bliss consciousness which cannot be comprehended or explained. Remember, the finite can never know the infinite. So you can't explain it.
It's only afterwards you can realize that there was nothing.
Afterwards there's no one left to realize.
I mean when it's not permanent.
Well, there's nobody left. If it's not permanent, then I will realize everything. if it isn't permanent, thoughts will come and it'll be just like whoever you fall. It's only temporary. But if it's permanent, there are no thoughts. There's no I. There's no explanation. There is nobody left.
So there's nobody to come back.
There's nobody to go anywhere to come back. There's nobody home.
So who's mining the store?
Nobody.
What store?
The famous nobody.
Who's on first?
No wonder I think the ego is afraid, because it's facing the loss of existence.
Of course. That's the last thing it wants.
Is that because we feel earthbound, or we feel like if our ego doesn't exist, then we don't exist?
It's part of the karmic pull to believe that you are existence as a body, as a mind, as an ego. And when it starts disappearing, it'll make you afraid. For as you just said, you think you're going into nothingness, and you're afraid to do that. But you have to push forward until everything is gone. Then you'll really be home. And it's a different ball game.
So things that might come up would be fear of annihilation and things like that. Right?
Yes. And a lot of things from past lives will come up. You have to get rid of everything before you become realized. But when you get rid of the I, all the dormant seeds of past experiences are attached to the I. When the I goes, everything else goes. That's why that's the fastest way.
What sort of a ball game is it then?
It's beyond explanation. There's no one to say. There's no one left to explain. You become yourself.
So in a sense, is that like everything that makes you a separate individual or a separate person is erased?
Yes. You become omnipresence. You become radiant bliss. And you can say, all this is the self, and I am that.
And I was never anything else.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what was this question?
Well, that's an explanation, a big one.
He didn't ask a question. He said I was never anything else. Let's sing some more songs. Because he's not attached to things. There's nothing wrong with relationships or owning something. But do not be attached in your mind to it. That's how you become free. By being not attached mentally. Simply by knowing the truth about yourself.
Because before, earlier you were saying to feel from the heart.
You feel from your heart in the beginning. And then that leads to a higher consciousness. When you see everybody as yourself, all fear disappears. And when all fear disappears, you can be totally honest with people. You can own things. You can get married and not get married. You can live in a house or a tent. It doesn't make any difference. And if someone takes something from you, it doesn't matter. As an example, in the story of Ramana Maharshi, when he lived in the Skanda Ashram up in the hill in Arunachala, one night at about 3 in the morning, he was attacked by thieves. He had about 6 devotees with him. And the thieves screamed through the window, "Give us everything you've got or we'll kill you." So his devotees wanted to fight the thieves. And he said, "No. Give them what they want. Carry it out for them." And he invited the thieves in the house to take whatever they liked. He explained to his devotees, "It is their dharma to be thieves. It is our dharma not to resist because we are sadhus. So give them what they want." The next day they were captured by the police. And Ramana got all those things back. But it's the attitude that counts. When you realize that you are the universe, then the whole universe becomes you. And you own the whole universe. So you don't have any greed anymore. Like you have to possess something. Another story about Ramana is when he was walking around the hill, he inadvertently stepped in a hornet's nest. And instead of pulling his foot out and running away, he started to speak to the hornets and he said, "Sting me all you can, it's my fault, I stepped in your nest. Good, sting me, I deserve it." And he kept his leg there about 10 minutes. And of course, when he took it out, it was full of bites. The average person would have gone to the hospital. But he just walked back to the ashram. And everything disappeared within a couple of days. So that's non-attachment.
Robert, a girl is facing rape.
Mm-hmm.
By instance, a girl is facing rape.
Yes.
She has to fight all as she can.
I guess she does. She has to fight. But I know something about this. When I had some meetings in Hawaii, I used to have a girl that told me she was raped 7 times. And each time she allowed the rapist to do what he wants with her. And she didn't care. And she was happy as a lark. But that's her attitude. So who knows? But if you don't resist, you'll get out of situations more quickly than if you do resist. There's something real about that. You know yourself, if you're a woman and somebody's trying to rape you, the thrill is in resisting for the guy. When you resist, his advances. But if you come on to him and you say, "Okay, come on, I love you, what you're doing. I love you to do it," he'll become frightened and probably leave you and go away because he didn't expect that. If you're cooperating, a rapist doesn't like that. They like when you resist, so they've got power over you. That's something to think about. Non-resistance always works. But as long as you believe that you are the body, you can never practice non-resistance. Your ego will always interfere and make you stick up for your rights. It's only in the period when you're practicing your sadhana. Who am I? Self-inquiry. That you become stronger and stronger and you're able to practice non-resistance. Therefore, do not try to acquire something positive. Rather, get rid of the I, and everything will come by itself. In other words, do not try to acquire positive traits, because they'll take you years and years. Find out to whom they come. Find out who has the problem. And find the source. Then everything will take care of itself. Consider this your spiritual family. Ask personal questions. Things that have been bothering you for a long time. Don't be afraid. Let it all hang out.
Assuming that our goal is to be realized within this lifetime, if you were facing imminent death or something, it would be, and you were not realized, it would be to your advantage to resist. So you stick around and keep practicing, wouldn't it?
It depends. It depends on your karma. It depends on many factors. But if you're killed while you're practicing, there's no doubt you'll come back to a spiritual family and you'll be able to practice again when you're young. But it depends on a lot of things.
But you know, as so many people have spoken up to Maharshi and in the class, it's sort of about trying for 20 years and not succeeding. It seems the necessity for this, as Nisargadatta said, the only reason to be in the body is self-realization. So
yes.
One wants on a certain level to hang on.
To become self-realized.
That, right.
Exactly. But if it doesn't happen, don't worry about it. Your effort never goes in vain. Everything you do, every practice that you take.
So you'd be reborn in the next grade, sort of.
Sort of. Maybe even on a nicer planet.
Robert, yes. What about in the course of sadhana? There are these periods in when the ones who are doing sadhana may feel dry, a little bit dejected, a little bit disappointed. Like he's going nowhere. What would you have to say to me? There are periods like that in the course of sadhana. What would you have to say to that practitioner?
Then you observe. You become a witness to those feelings. And you watch those feelings. And then after you ask yourself, to whom do they come? Who has these feelings? To whom do they come? To me? I feel this? Who am I? Who is the I that feels dejected and keeps still? But hang on to the I. Hold on to the I with all your might. Like you're holding on to a rope. And then let go. And when you let go, there's silence. Then you will feel that those feelings disappear and they don't come back anymore. But you have to keep going back again and again until it happens. It's like studying to be a doctor. You have to go to class after class after class, study, study, study. Sometimes you think you're going to fail. So you try again, you study harder, until you finally make it. It's the same thing. But no practice is in vain. Everything is accounted for. And if you die in your attempt, you carry it with you and you have another chance. You'll be ahead of the game. Do not worry about anything. Be happy, be free. Love yourself. Not your ego, but yourself.
Robert, you said there's no free will, but there's a choice to turn within or not. Isn't that a function of totality also? Why?
This is the only freedom.
Exception.
It's the only freedom we've really got. Not to react to a condition or to turn within. That's a choice. We don't have to do that and allow karma to carry us along. Or we can do that and become free. The choice is ours. That's the only choice we've got. Everything else is predetermined.
Isn't that just the illusion of choice? Have an understanding that the brain is not capable of creating a thought or initiating anything. It cannot have an original thought. It's only a receiver and receives impulses from pure consciousness outside of itself.
It only reacts
to that. Is that not so?
That is so. But the brain has nothing to do with the mind. It's the mind that causes the brain to do that. Therefore, we do not work on annihilating the brain. We work in annihilating the mind. When the mind is gone, the brain will take care of itself and rest in the heart and do the right things. So don't concern yourself with the brain. Concern yourself with getting rid of the mind. And everything will take care of itself.
Who is to concern himself with getting rid of the mind?
The ego. That doesn't exist.
Having turned in, we're all here. So everything else is already determined in destiny. Is destiny determined in each moment, or is it predetermined? And everything that ever will be is already known now.
It's all predetermined.
So everything that ever will exist or happen already is so.
And it's all an illusion. So ask yourself, to whom is this destiny? And you'll find that destiny never existed.
So then on the highest level, neither would it predestined.
Exactly. On the highest level, there's no realization. There's nothing to realize.
The mind accepts the concept of what you're saying.
Then we have to go through
this. Getting beyond that.
Then you have to ask yourself, to whom does the mind come? For who is the mind? Who has to go through all these concepts? Who has to worry about these things?
This ego wants to know.
The ego wants to know?
Yes.
So for whom is there an ego?
Just for this illusory ego, this false identification. If there's destiny, then I have no choice in whether there is awakening in this case or not.
The choice you have is to turn within and not be concerned about this.
So are you saying in a way that by turning within you can cancel out your predestiny?
Exactly.
Who turns within?
Not the ego.
The mind.
That's the last thing the ego wants.
You have to use the mind to get rid of the mind.
Mind is the ego, is it not?
Yes.
To turn it on itself, that's
what you're trying to do. You turn it on yourself, exactly. As you turn it on itself, it becomes weaker and weaker and weaker. Until it's completely annihilated.
And the process appears to be free choice until the self ends, and then there was no choice nor no mind to turn inward in the first place.
Exactly.
On the relative level, there's apparent choice.
Yes.
But in effect, there's no choice whatsoever.
Because you're already free. Yeah.
So are you predestined to be realized at a given time?
Have you been holding this all the time?
I sure have. So I'm determined. Predestined.
There was a question that Dana asked. Dana, say that again. Are you predestined to awaken in a particular lifetime, or are you predestined to become realized?
If you talk about at that level, you're right. You are. But that does not exist, so you're not.
I got you down for 9:30 this morning.
See, as long as we're playing with concepts, we're going to get stuck longer and longer. Forget about predestination. Focus on the I and stop the game. As you all know, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, we're having a Thanksgiving party, and we get together.
Sunday?
Yes.
Here?
Yes. From 1 o'clock until about 6. It's a potluck. You're all welcome to come to Henry's house.
Do we know about this?
Thank you, Henry.
Can I borrow his car?
But no cash. $500.
No.
I have a question on that topic. It's a relative, dealing on a relative level, but you see this friend and they've smashed up your car and now they want to do whatever the next thing is.
So you.
Isn't it the person whose car it looks like was smashed up, at some point, wouldn't they develop some concern or compassion towards their friend and somehow say something to make them aware that although it may not be hurting them themselves, but karmically it may be hurting them to be doing these things, and therefore not just keep giving that person things to create bad karma with?
Perhaps the person is not ready to listen yet.
Well, either way, shouldn't that person make some kind of choice out of this compassion and concern for their friend to do something?
Say it again.
Well, someone borrows my, what was the first one? Before borrowing the car? What did they do?
They ate
all the food in the refrigerator. And then they borrowed my car and they smashed it up. And now they want to borrow $1,000. Anyhow, all these things happen out. At some point. I'm going to be concerned about this person, and maybe compassion will be expressed, and I will tell that person that, frankly, these things, I'm not accruing bad karma by you doing these things. In fact, it's very well could be the opposite, but you yourself are very well accruing, or could very well be accruing bad karma, and say something so they can take a look at that and make some kind of choice.
This depends on what state of consciousness you're in.
Either party.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
you can either do nothing and just watch what happens, because if you're non-attached and you're realized, what do you really own? Nothing.
Yeah, but you're seeing someone on a relative level who's involved. Well, if you do see it that way.
But you're not seeing it that way.
Okay.
The realized person does not see that.
All right. Okay, an unrealized person see that.
So then you've got to work with it.
Yeah.
So you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah. Boy, if I become realized, I really want to remember the view of an unrealized being. I mean, that seems like that's helpful to someone else.
But you don't really, because you see the unrealized being as realized.
And so,
see, when you're realized, you see the whole universe as yourself. You can't see anything else. There's no longer duality for you. So how can you see the things that you're talking about? That's for the AI.
So that's a good sign to tell where one is at?
Yes, if it bothers you.
Could you not say that you won't think of it one way or the other, you'll just act spontaneously. You won't think whether you should help or you won't help. You'll just do the right thing.
As a yogi.
It depends what state of consciousness you're in. As a yana, you'll do nothing.
But nothing could be anything.
It could, but you'll probably do nothing at all. You'll just watch. Because it doesn't matter.
In that case, it seems like I'd rather have an ayani as a friend than a
yana. Well spoken.
If you have a choice.
Have you had a lot of those already?
Well, there's a very famous Zen koan called Dropping Ashes on the Buddha, which addresses this point exactly. A man supposedly attains emptiness and there's nothing matters to him, so he comes in and he flicks his cigarette ashes on the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, how do you teach him that there are time and places for everything? And this is the wrong time and place. And the other part of the story is this man is very big and he listens to no one. So how do you teach him? That's the koan. I never answered it.
There's another part.
The answer to it is there's no one to teach and no one dropped ashes.
Because the Buddha never existed.
That's going too far.
I always thought that related to that if the Buddha is outside of yourself, maybe we're dealing with a different thing.
So can you expand on that again?
Who sees the ashes? Who sees the situation? The non-realized beings. So they've got the problem. But in reality, the Buddha was never disturbed and no ashes were dropped and there's no reaction. Or you can ask the question, for whom is there a reaction? For the non-realized person. They've got to deal with it. Let's make it more personal. If you want to come over and stab me 50 times and cut off my fingers and my feet, enjoy yourself. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Because it's the body that you're doing that you think is real, that you're hurting. But I have nobody. So what's the difference? Why should I protect something that doesn't exist? That's the answer.
Why do you feed it?
I feed it because it's an action that my body takes. It's karmic. What's left of the karma.
No one feeds it?
You see it like that. That's your point of view, that I feed it and everything else.
No, no one feeds it. It just feeds.
It feeds.
No one feeds it.
No one feeds it. Exactly.
You've got it. In your refrigerator.
Well, boy, he cleaned that out.
Wasn't him, it was his body.
Yeah,